Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So tonight we have a very special guest with us, a guy that I like to call my friend, and a guy who's very experienced in movies and movie news, IGN executive movies editor Jim Vegeta. Jim, did I get that last name right?
Pretty close. Vegeta.
Vegeta. It's nice to have you on the podcast. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate the invite.
Well, not a problem. Not a problem, sir. So, Luc Besson had some very interesting comments to relay to us about Captain America and his thoughts on comic book movies. What were your thoughts about what he had to say about Captain America?
Well, I mean, I wasn't terribly surprised by it. I mean, I've interviewed the guy before, and I've read other interviews with him, and I think it's as you know, he's European, and they just view things differently over there. And there was, if people remember correctly, there was a concern among Marvel and Paramount executives, because remember, Paramount released the first most of Phase One. About even calling the movie Captain America when it came out, in a lot of ways, for the reasons that Luc Besson criticized it. It turned out that it was ill-founded, that the movie did just fine, and the sequels even more with that title in there. So, I mean, I think Besson is also having a bit of a sour grapes thing going on because of Valerian and all that, but I can't say I found his comments completely out of character or anything, or surprising,
Well, I think that the thing that kind of took me by surprise was the fact that he was referencing the movies particularly, which particularly when you're talking about Winter Soldier and Civil War, is more of Cap challenging what the American government and what, the status of all that is. And, the comic books, yes, I could very much see that point of view of propaganda.
I'm not convinced that he even saw those movies.
Yeah.
I think he might just be talking about the sheer mere existence of them and their marketing. I'm not convinced, but yeah, I think if he had seen the movies, for the reasons you point out, he might have spoken a little differently about them.
Very, very much so, I think. Any particular thoughts on what he said about comic book movies in general, about them being, tired or old or played out since, the first Spider-Man and Iron Man movies?
I mean, again, that's not exactly an original sentiment. We've heard that from a number of people over the years. Every now and then somebody rears up with it's going to go the way of the Western and all that. And, while every genre goes through its, highs and lows, I don't think they're ever going to stop making these things. There's just too much. Hollywood is too much about branded IP now for them to ever fully go away. And Marvel has simply just been too successful. I think people have to accept that Marvel is basically now like a live-action Pixar. They are going to be around, and they're going to continue to churn out movies probably for the rest of your life. And some will be great, and some will not be good. But I don't think, at least the Marvel brand, I think, is pretty safe. Other ones, I don't know. That definitely is more. I'm not trying to throw elbows at DC because I wish them well. But, I think just Marvel has it figured out, just the way Pixar has got it figured out. But I will be curious to see. Kevin Feige's not going to be there forever running the show. I believe his contract is up in 2019, and there's been a lot of, kind of widespread industry sort of speculation that he would take over Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy would take over Disney, and Bob Iger would run for president. And Bob Iger, the guy who runs Disney.
Right.
So I think that I could definitely see shifts there. And I think the big question is, because Feige then would be out just in time for Phase 4 to be over, for Phase 4 to be kind of kicking off. And so I think it'll be very interesting to see what does Marvel do without him. I there are many factors involved there, but, you know, let's face it, at the end of the day, everything has happened on his watch, and for the most part, he's pulled it off.
Speaking to that, actually, do you think that the separation between Marvel Studios and their film division, their TV division, and moving Perlmutter over to more in the TV side, you think that creative freedom has kind of emboldened Feige with the loss of the creative committee?
Yes, absolutely. I agree. I think there was, I mean, by all accounts, there was no love lost there. And, you know, you have to, you know, Marvel TV and digital are still very much under Perlmutter's control. And I think that on the studio side, you've seen them be a little bit, they've really gone there in terms of some of the wackier things, and they've had them, that those gambles pay off. They're able to get, it seems like, any actor they want. It doesn't seem like, you don't hear about the sort of fighting over salaries like you used to. You know, it seems like the money hose might be in effect now. Right. Where it wasn't before. So, yeah, I think Perlmutter being gone sounds like it was not necessarily a bad thing for them and the creative committee as well. The more bureaucracy you have in any sort of creative endeavor, just the more it's just going to get diluted and decisions can't happen fast and you've got to move fast, you know, so...
Right, and especially with you know, movies and the way that they're set up, and the more hands you tend to have in those creative pots, the worse off things seem to be. What were your thoughts on, because I know there was some talk when Homecoming was coming out about how they could pay Downey and Keaton to be in the movie. What do you think the future is post Phase 3? I mean... You know, where do they go creatively? I know my you know, co-host Chad here talks all the time about Phase Fantastic Four, but what do you think that, where do you think they could go as far as a story?
Well, I mean, you either go even wackier cosmic, or you go the opposite direction and really bring it back down to Earth. I mean, Spider-Man Homecoming is probably the most just street level movie that they've done, and I love that about it. It's as street level as the Netflix shows, but I think it really, it depends on who are the characters that are going to anchor it. It seems likely that Captain Marvel is going to be one of them, and you know, we'll see at that point, you know, Spider-Man obviously, so we'll have to see who exactly are our heroes that we're latching onto. Because I'm not convinced that Iron Man, Cap, and Thor are going to be around in Phase 4. Doesn't mean they're killing them off. I just, you know, I think there's a reason why now Black Panther and Captain Marvel and Spider-Man, all that. The trick is, are they going to be compelling enough to continue into a Phase 5 even? And I think they will be. I think Spider-Man and Black Panther so far, they have seen some Panther looks great. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Marvel in particular gets their characters right, and they have a firm understanding of who their characters are, and that kind of helps them ground their stories and character development, which is something that some other comic book movie studios haven't quite figured out. Chad, I know you had a question.
Hey, Jim, this is Chad.
Hey.
So Brian got all the good questions about Marvel and stuff. So I'm going to, you know, you can't bring up Marvel and not bring up their distinguished competition. So, you know, the big question is what's really going on with Justice League? We have all of these rumors coming out about the reshoots and the tragedy with Zack Snyder and replacing him with Joss Whedon. And then you throw in with that the rumors about Ben and not being Batman anymore. Like, what do you think the status of this movie is? Like, what can we expect?
I feel the optimist in me thinks it will be a very movie with an identity crisis. where it's neither kind of like a fish nor fowl kind of thing. And the less optimistic side of me thinks of that gif of Donald Glover and Community walking into the room on fire. I think that there's a chance that the movie will have sequences that are effective, but overall, it's a huge uphill battle to have to piece together essentially a whole new movie off of something that was already shot. And, you know, the stuff that I saw on set looked okay, but you pretty much always see the best stuff on the set. Mm-hmm. Is it? They're not taking you there to show you their crap. You know, they want you to, you know, Green Lantern looked good on the set. Like, okay, like, so I think Justice League, if anything, my concern is that it's going to have this just sort of like confused identity. Is it dark and heavy? Is it going to be funny and adventurous? Is it building up a big shared universe, or is it just a bunch of hints and no payoff to anything because they don't want to get ahead of themselves this time? So, you know, I really don't have a sense of it being a movie that has a sort of cohesion to it yet. And that to me is the big question. Like, what is this movie at this point?
Okay. So yeah, you're like right there with everybody else. So with it being so much of a question, what can Warner Brothers' expectations be, given all of this turmoil, and they still have this universe they have to continue with movies they're already shooting?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, because, you know, Aquaman, I think I would say, you know, in terms of what might be riding on Aquaman as a result of Justice League, do we like Aquaman at the end of Justice League? I mean, that's the most simple, basic question you're going to walk at. Like, do I want to see this guy for 2 hours on his own? Or does he only really work when he's got, you know, another superhero to play off of? How compelling is he? Is Momoa just like a one-note kind of performer in this thing? I don't think that he is. I like him in other things. But, you know, I think there's Justice League could also, if not done well, does that tarnish Wonder Woman's now very stellar brand coming off of that movie and going into a sequel? Or again, will she kind of save the day? So those to me are huge questions. I think I'd be a little more worried about Aquaman and the effect Justice League might have on it rather than Wonder Woman, because you have that movie out there now. The toughest part for them was just getting that first one out and having it work and having people like it. And they've done that. For Aquaman, will this movie work on its own? I have a lot of faith in James Wan. I mean, I think he might be, if Patty Jenkins came in and saved the day, and I feel like James Wan is another step in the right direction in terms of a confident filmmaker who can get, can land those moments when he needs them, the audience-pleasing moments and then sort of the character-based moments. So, he's right now, James Wan is the thing that is keeping me invested in Aquaman. If he dropped out at some point, he's not going to drop out. But if he had dropped out at some point going into production, I'd have been like, oh, man, just flush that fish down the toilet.
All right. A couple more questions for you. I know that you're a Bond fan.
Yep.
Your thoughts on Daniel Craig returning and where the franchise is for setting up for Bond 25?
I think that they look. I think at this point they don't have a distributor, and you know, so they're out there, essentially selling themselves, trying to make a deal, and it's very difficult to make a very good deal. Even at, you know, and according to early reports, they just want a distributor for one movie. Well, I mean, it's really tough to kind of want someone to sign on, James Bond or not, if there are all these just like question marks over it. Especially if it was going to be a new Bond and all that sort of business. Having Daniel Craig back now for one more makes it a lot easier to go out there and be like, okay, I know exactly what I'm getting with a Daniel Craig James Bond movie. That is it'll make money, you know. Even Spectre, which wasn't terribly well liked universally, it was a success. Cost too much, but it was still, you know, did well. So I think from a business standpoint, it just makes sense to go one more time with Daniel Craig and give the fans and Craig the sort of hopefully going out in a positive note, which I think is what they wanted with Spectre. You know, yeah, I think he really did want out with that one. And when the movie wasn't well received, and I think that necessitated doing, okay, come on, let's try one more time.
Do you think they are regretting reviving Blofeld and that whole deal as far as continuity issues going forward?
I don't think it helps them that, you know, you get Christoph Waltz and then he's kind of like not necessarily the best part of that movie. And that it didn't really, the whole kind of retconning him into being like knowing Bond growing up didn't really seem to land a punch, you know? So I think they might be regretting it a little bit. I don't think they regret getting that IP back and being able to use it. You'll remember that, you know, they used Quantum there a couple of times, you know, kind of set up that Mr. White character and then paid that off with Spectre. So, I think they'll use Spectre in some regard, but maybe it won't be the main kind of overarching sort of threat to the series going forward as they might have initially thought it might be.
Right. So one more question. Obviously, we got the news about the Obi-Wan Kenobi film that we all suspected would eventually one day be a thing, that it's going to be a thing. Your thoughts on kind of people's reaction overall to another movie that takes place in this 80 years of continuity in this galaxy far, far away that only seems to have like 8 people in it?
Yeah, I wrote a piece about that today on IGN. Look, I think the only way I would be interested in an Obi-Wan movie is if, you know, the theory about him being an ancestor of Rey's is true. We find, you know, let's say we find that out for sure in Last Jedi, and this movie is being basically used, this Obi-Wan movie is basically being used as a sidequel, if you will, for Last Jedi and this new trilogy and the Rey character. That's really the only kind of creative reason I see to go back to that well. You know, he's been in 6 movies and, what, 2 TV shows? And I feel like at a certain point, I thought the Star Wars stories were meant to explore new corners of this galaxy far, far away. And as you point out, they keep going back to legacy characters and the Skywalker saga in one form or another. And it's, from a business standpoint, you know, it's a proven commodity, but creatively, there's how much gas is left in that tank? You know, one of the joys of the new trilogy are these new characters. You know, it was great to see Han back in action and Harrison Ford actually showed up. You know, he didn't phone it in. And I would suspect that, you know, Mark Hamill and Fisher are doing that, you know, are also showing up in Last Jedi, but I think it would be nice to test the waters here a little bit and let's see what does Star Wars mean beyond that family? Can we have a movie that isn't about the Force and isn't about the Jedi? You know, Rogue One, you guys might recall, was initially supposed to be that. You know, Gareth Edwards was at Celebration 2015 talking about that and saying that, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but his line was like, there's no God to come down and save you, you know, in this. And then by the time it got reworked, you know, obviously the Force was a big thing in the movie, and the Jedi and all that. So, yeah, I don't know. A lot is riding on Han Solo. You know, if that movie doesn't work, you because obviously there's not going to be too much about the Force and Jedi in that one, because he didn't believe in any of that stuff. And, you know, New Hope basically set up that he hadn't really heard a lot of that stuff. You know, if that movie doesn't work on a number of levels, maybe they see the writing on the wall and they're like, let's retreat back into what's safe and tried and true. And you have two different generations of people now who've grown up with Obi-Wan Kenobi. My generation and then the generation that grew up with the prequels. And we each generation loves their generation's Star Wars and those iterations of those characters. So for Disney and Lucasfilm, you know, they'd be kind of, if they're going to do this Obi-Wan movie, they'd be foolish to not bring back Ewan. Because for an entire generation, that is Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Do you feel like that's Kathleen Kennedy and the Lucasfilm Story Group being afraid of going back into, like, the prequel-type reaction? Like, just afraid that if we try something different and it doesn't work and we get fan backlash, that all this goodwill that we've built up with Episode 7 just erodes away?
I mean, possibly. I don't know how much I would say it's on the story group. I mean, story group was around before she was, and I admire Kathleen Kennedy a lot. I mean, what a career, you know, to go from an assistant to running Lucasfilm and probably ending up running Disney in a few years. But I think that you're dealing with business-minded executives who have to safeguard Star Wars. It's a beloved and very lucrative IP. I hate to reduce it down to a cold-sounding term like that, but that's what it is. And, you know, as long as they're going to continue to go back to what's safe, at a certain point, it's going to become stale. And then how much damage will have been wrought? I mean, maybe it's better to try a few things and fail at them. It's not like suddenly people are going to not be interested in Star Wars, but at least you'll have tried and shown that Star Wars is more than just that handful of characters that Lucas created.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Well, Jim, I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for coming on the show. And, you know, without you guys at IGN and without Keeping It Real and now the IGN Movie Show, which y'all should definitely check out, another excellent podcast, without you guys, there would be no Movies on the Brain. So, you know, I personally...
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate your friendship. So,
oh, wait, Chad. One last thing, Jim.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of the Schmodown, so I just wanted to tell you, I think Sweaty Hands and Clammy Hands, same thing.
You know what, man? Damn it, I agree. That was controversial.
And it was.
I ruled back in the Schmodown. We're trying to figure that out. As you guys know, Eric Goldman is now working at Marvel.com, so can't quite do Team IGN, but we'll see what we can do. And I'll definitely be back on Schmodown one way or another.
Yeah. And Jim, one last thing before I let you go that I have to ask, because it is the running thing of the podcast. Do you believe that Pepper Potts will be in Avengers Infinity War?
Yeah, I think she will be, actually. I'd be shocked if she wasn't. They got like everyone else in there. Why not?
Well, I mean, Fury did say he wasn't. Sam Jackson said Fury isn't in it, so.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
So. You know, she didn't have to be in Homecoming. I mean, there was no real reason they had to bring her in. So, I mean, if they can sweet-talk her into one scene, you know, kind of a hint at, like, what Tony stands to lose if besides the entire world, but, like, something on a very personal level for him. Yeah, I could see her very much popping up for at least a scene, maybe her and Happy Hogan.
Yeah, my thing on that was that I felt leaving her out of Civil War was kind of wrong, just simply from an emotional standpoint. Especially considering that their relationship is the core, and then to basically have them broken up and then to not address it, you know, going forward when Rhodey meets his fate, that she wouldn't at some point have, you know, popped back in. So,
Yeah, I mean, especially too with how Iron Man 3 ended, and he basically drives off with her, and then everything in their relationship, that they break up and the reunion, all happened off screen, which I think kind of cheapens it. I mean, it worked enough, but it, you know, it's pretty important stuff. These are, you know, characters that have been around for almost 10 years now, and doing something as significant as that off screen is kind of a bummer.
Which was my argument entirely. All right, Jim, we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
Will do. And we're back. Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
And from the galaxy far, far away, a man known as T-Bob Abar.
Yo, Brian, Chad, what's up, y'all? Glad to be here.
Has decided to strike back, as we have promised. So it's been another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So let's go over some of the things in our normal course of our normal episode. Again, we want to thank Jim for having an opportunity to come on and do that for us. So, Captain Marvel, it's got new screenwriters. Your thoughts, sir?
So it's just one screenwriter, and her
one,
name...
Yeah, one screenwriter who is a female.
Yep.
Because as I remember, it was the woman who wrote Inside Out and the original woman who had the...
Move the mic closer, just a little closer to your mouth. Sorry, we're in studio now.
Yeah.
So we're getting our studio techniques down.
We're getting our studio techniques down.
Yes.
And, because if we sound professional, it's because we're in a professional studio for a change. So, as I recall, Nicole Perlman or something, she was one of the first people writing Guardians of the Galaxy, and the woman who was writing Inside Out, they were both writing a version of this, or pitching it to Marvel, and then fleshing out the draft.
Yeah. So now we have, it's not a page one rewrite, so I'm guessing they're still sticking with her script, and then they brought in, her name is Geneva Robertson Durrett. I know I'm butchering her last name, but the only, like, in the announcement, a creditor has being a screenwriter for Gotham City Sirens, which is a movie that has not happened yet. And looking at her IMDb, it's a whole bunch of movies that have not happened yet or will never happen. Well, there's one. She has a credit for Tomb Raider. That's the only one.
The Vikander Tomb Raider that is about to come out.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then not Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider.
No. The Vikander Tomb Raider, which is based off the new games.
Which have been well received. I have not actually played them though.
Right.
Yeah. But the other credits are a new Dungeons and Dragons, Gotham City Sirens, Mask. Y'all might be too young to remember Armored Strike Command.
No, we.
I actually do not remember Mask. But are y'all Mask fans?
I remember.
Do you know what the robot in Mask is named?
I do not.
I forgot.
It's literally named T-Bob.
Ah.
It's the only other example of a T-Bob that I've ever run into in my life is from the Mask cartoon, and I did not know about it until college when the internet pointed it out to me.
Oh, nice. I don't think I've ever watched the cartoon. I've just played with my cousin's toys. So.
T-Bob is the comedic relief. He's the bumbling idiot robot assistant, kind of. So.
It's okay. It's for this particular thing, as long as they've got female perspective and it's not a page one rewrite, we're good. You know, we're getting toward filming for this thing. Like, Brie Larson's actually going to have to put on a costume at some point.
Yeah, this is just like business as usual.
Yeah. And especially considering they're getting ready to do the... Skrull Kree war and that whole thing, so I'm sure there are some like very particular elements there that they want to make sure they get right.
Yeah, they have to prep for a secret invasion. They're not going to say it, but that's what's going to happen.
Not going to happen. That's not a phase four thing.
I don't want it to happen, but that's what's going to happen.
That's not what's going to happen. They're not going to go, oh, look, Hawkeye was secretly a Skrull.
No, I don't think that, well, maybe Hawkeye, but I'm pretty sure Nick Fury is going to be a Skrull.
No, not going to happen.
Look, I don't want it to happen.
He has two eyes. He has two eyes. And it's set in the 90s, so.
Yeah. That's kind of it for that. I don't think we'll get much on Captain Marvel until next year.
Next Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Because there's no D23 next year as far as I know, so.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. So Bond 25, as we covered on the interview with Jim there. Craig coming back. Y'all's thoughts on getting his fifth Bond movie for him?
Yes.
Because Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Spectre, Skyfall, and then it'll be Bond 25. Yeah.
Is that the most of any single actor as far as Bonds go?
I think Roger Moore has him.
Right.
How many does Roger Moore have?
I think it's like seven.
Six or seven. I think he did it the longest. Yeah. And Sean Connery might tie Sean Connery with this, but Roger Moore's got him. And yeah, well, he's never going to give it up.
That depends on if you count Connery's official Bond movies or the ones that he did just to tick off Broccoli and the producers.
We'll stick with the official ones.
Yeah. So
my Bond knowledge is unfortunately quite limited as far as the old Bonds go. In fact, like, the most impactful Bond of my life is indeed the Pierce Brosnan 90s Bonds.
And see, we're roughly the same age, so we grew up with, you know, GoldenEye and playing the video game and all of that.
Is it Tomorrow Never Dies?
Yeah.
Is that the other Brosnan one?
Yeah.
Die Another Day, that's when it started going.
Is that when he's fencing?
Oh, they all like blend together. Yeah, if it's not GoldenEye.
Is that when he's fencing? Is that every Pierce Brosnan Bond?
Yeah, I think that was the one that always gets me is at the point in time where we were like, literally like, he can outrun a avalanche with like on a snowmobile.
Yeah, but it was pretty awesome.
It was the 90s. There was a lot you could get away with in the 90s that you can't get away with anymore.
Yeah.
But no, so I guess, I don't know, for me personally, I think Daniel Craig's a solid Bond, I suppose. But like I said, I actually fell off after, I thought Casino Royale was great. Quantum of Solace, I didn't understand. I was surprised to learn, we were talking about before the show, that it was a byproduct of the writer's strike. Makes a lot of sense as to why that movie made no sense. But yeah, I never really hopped back on board the Bond bandwagon after that.
Skyfall is roundly considered one of the best Bond movies ever made. And that's one of the reasons, is because M is basically the Bond girl in that movie.
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
And it's just a really well-done movie. Spectre, on the other hand, not so much.
I don't even remember that movie.
Yeah, so he's got two of the best Bond movies ever made, the Casino Royale remake and Skyfall. And so the hope, as Jim was talking about, is that he can go out on a high note this time with
his... Yeah, he just hit every other one. Go right. 3-5, bet 600.
Yeah, it's pretty much the way that they want to go with that. So we also talked on the podcast about Marvel and about Pepper Potts. Your thoughts on Nick Fury...
I didn't know that he wasn't in...
Well, Sam Jackson is right now, at this moment, promoting a small movie called The Hitman's Bodyguard, which I chose not to see last night.
Him and Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
Am I bad for wanting to see that? I have not looked up any ratings on it. I'm kind of... I can get behind just the very base premise of Sam Jackson and Ryan Reynolds, maybe. Because it's rated R.
Right. Yeah. It's a hard R. And I can tell you from everything that I've read and seen from people who I know who saw the movie... They said that it was pretty much a movie you can catch on HBO at 2 in the morning. And it is Reynolds playing to his maximum and Jackson playing to his maximum and like them playing off of each other, which is really cool, in a B movie.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much how that is for the dog days of August.
I mean, that's fine for, you know, you got to have some fun some kind of way. So this seems like a fun movie that I'm not going to pay for.
So what about... That movie, is it the Guy Ritchie movie, King Arthur, that's now popping up on demand?
Oh, yes. Yeah, from May. Yeah.
From May.
Am I bad on, because I was thinking about maybe later tonight, just renting that to watch it for fun, knowing that it's going to be terrible.
There were only 8 of us in the opening night screening, which is still better than the Fantastic Four, which...
Oh, God, man.
Which me and Jack were 2 of the 4 people in that movie.
Wait, I did not read, so are the Fantastic Four comics... Go canceled right now?
Yes. Marvel plays hardball with Fox.
They've been canceled for years now.
Wow.
Like at least 3. And the rumor at the time was that they canceled it because, you know, Fox has the rights to Fantastic Four and they're not really doing right. So they're like, we're just going to X this out. It also goes into that Fantastic Four was on the lower end of, in terms of sales for comics. Mm. So it all fed into it. But the writer from that run of Fantastic Four here recently has said, yeah, they canceled it because Fox has the movie rights. And so, you know, Marvel's going to play hardball with them. And it doesn't seem to be working since Fox seems to want to keep making these movies that are going to be terrible.
Great movies. Really,
but to answer your question, T-Bob, actually, it's one of the best bad movies ever made.
King Arthur.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going for. Somehow, I feel like fantasy movies have a wider margin for error when it comes to being, like, so bad they're good, as long as they don't take themselves too seriously. I tried watching Assassin's Creed on the plane, and I wanted to gouge my eyes out. The movie was, like, over, like, 2.5 hours, it felt like, of super, like, somber music. And what's his name? The good-looking guy.
Michael Fassbender.
And Fassbender just looking stressed as hell. But it was that movie was so easy. Just so King Arthur, though, it's Guy Ritchie, right? Fast-cutting, fun, out of control.
All of the things that we don't think of when we think of Aladdin.
God, I can't believe he's still doing that.
Yeah. Actually,
I had no idea he was doing Aladdin.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie's King Arthur is basically, if you like Sucker Punch, that's what we're going to get.
I do actually like Sucker Punch. I've been on very much on record about this before. The visual feast that is Sucker Punch, I can get behind.
Yeah, so if you like Sucker Punch, you will definitely like Guy Ritchie's King Arthur. Yeah. You'll be fine. But back to the topic at hand. So if he's on the press tour for Hitman's Bodyguard, he says he's not gotten a call from Marvel for Avengers 3, and they're currently shooting Avengers 4. It's like literally within 5 miles of his home, so he could be on set at any point. But what are your thoughts on possibly not seeing Nick Fury in an Avengers movie for the first time?
So, I mean, we're throwing in, like, pretty much every Marvel character in this movie. So if there's not a way to, like...
According to my big board, which I have at the apartment...
You have a big board to keep the string theory of the Marvel Universe in line?
Pretty much. I have a whiteboard on which is written the names of every conceivable hero and every conceivable villain and the place of each Infinity Stone within the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh my God, it's like a beautiful mind.
It really is.
You're going to walk in one day and he's going to be curled up just like tearing his hair out.
Or the Aviator, where I'm just like...
Where is Peppers?
Pepper,
where are you?
Peppers all the time. And when he walked me in there and showed me this board, I'm like, oh wow. Like, you know, I really like this comic book stuff, but I haven't done this.
I have too much time on my hands.
That is excellent.
What can I say? I am a nerd. But according to that, my official count was they were, if you counted like the ancillary people, like Agent 13 and Nick Fury and Nina Hill and all of that, it was somewhere around 26 heroes.
Jeez.
Yeah, 26 heroes. And then you had like 8 villains who were still active in the universe. And some of those are just, you know, the movies haven't come out yet, so you don't know whether the villain gets through it. But that's a lot of people to work around.
Exactly. And if you've seen the Comic-Con footage, you know, the pirated one, I'm not advocating you go do that, but it's there if you want to see it. There seems to be a part of this movie that takes place on a spot that is not Earth. So I would think it's a good reason to not have the people that will be more restricted to Earth, like Nick Fury and How I Met Your Mother girl, Maria Hill. I believe that he won't be in the third one. I have a hard time believing he won't be in the fourth one, since it's going to like wrap up everything we've gotten to. And he was like, it was Tony Stark and him. So I have a hard time believing he won't be in the fourth one at all.
It'd be pretty crazy, dude. Yeah. That'd be pretty wild.
But I think he's more upset that he's not going to be a Black Panther, which again, if I were him, I'd be mad too.
They can't take me to Black Pantherville.
Yeah, like I'm in every movie y'all want to do. It, not even just you, Marvel, just anybody. You want to pay me, I'm going to show up there. So you're going to show me this movie
The man who did Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah.
And cannot be a Black Panther.
But this is the universe I helped create. And you're going to give me this black cast that's doing all these great things and I can't show up in it? Yeah, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to let everybody know about it too.
And it's, I mean, he was one of the cornerstones of, like, making this universe a reality. What was it? Because at the time, there was the Ultimate Marvel Universe in the comic books, right? Mm-hmm. And the Nick Fury in that looked like Sam Jackson.
Yeah.
But that was the predecessor to the actual casting, right? And the person drew him with Sam Jackson in mind.
Yeah, and they make a joke about it in the comic. Like, they're sitting around, the Ultimates are sitting around the table like, who's going to play you in the movies? And he's like, Samuel Jackson's going to play me. So when they make this movie, everybody's like, you got to get Samuel Jackson to be Nick Fury. So if he doesn't do that walk-on scene in Iron Man, I don't know if we would be in this universe. So he has a right to say, look, y'all built this on me. But with that said, as mad as I would be if I was him, Nick Fury don't need to show up in Wakanda. I'm sorry.
So where is Nick Fury, if he's not going to be in Avengers 3, where is he currently in the Marvel Universe?
Missing in action, according to my board.
So where did he where does his trail go cold?
The last time we saw him in a Marvel movie was Age of Ultron, picking up that helicarrier and helping them get off of the, Sokovia. That was the last time we saw him. And as far as the Avengers know, he is alive because he revealed himself to them at the barn.
But it's like only like the Avengers and the people in the helicarrier know he's alive. So he's like in hiding somewhere.
Right.
Doing Nick Fury things.
Doing Nick Fury things. Missing Civil War, though.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that, you know, big purple dude's going to fall out of the sky and start ripping people's heads off. And Nick Fury's just going to be like, I'm going to stay in my little farmhouse here. Nothing to worry about.
Do you think that they start killing off any of these heroes now that ratio is so insanely imbalanced?
Me and Chad's personal theory for a long time is that Vision has an Infinity Stone in his head. Vision has to lose his head.
Yeah.
Vision has to lose his head not only so he can get the stone, but to establish Thanos as a really bad dude.
Yeah. You have to. There has to be some sort of consequence paid.
Vision is the easiest one because they've set him up to be so... so much better than the Avengers with that whole hammer thing in Age of Ultron. So it just makes sense that he's the one that has to die first, so everybody can be like, oh, he killed him. We're in trouble.
Yes, that's a great point. It's like the DBZ power level theory.
He was the top guy, and now we lost our top guy to this guy, so I don't know what we're going to do. But like when it comes to Cap and Thor and Iron Man, I know a lot of people want them to die, but if I'm Disney, I'm like, no. It's because the same, like, they can pass the mantle on to people, but people are attached to Iron Man as Tony Stark, not Iron Man as somebody else. So, yeah, you can kill them, but I think if you kill them this time, they have to stay dead, or otherwise you just devalue everything, and they have a habit of doing that already.
So y'all have talked about, I'm sure y'all have talked about this, and I know you kind of touched even on the interview there, but what do you do with those core characters then? Do you just eventually go to reboots, or do you just keep the same storylines going with new actors?
Well, there's been, the simple answer is that at least for one character in particular, Cap, you have had multiple people pick up the shield. And so you have hinted at Bucky. Bucky has wielded the shield in all three Captain America movies. And we all know that that's where the comics go. So if you want to have Bucky Barnes, a.k.a. Winter Soldier, pick up the mantle and run with it, it's possible. But again, I think it's going to be a torch passing type situation, or we're going to go away and heal our wounds for a bit. Y'all young kids take over for a little while.
Yeah, like... they can retire and go off. Like, Cap is easy. He can hand off the shield, but he's not dead. He can come back if you need him. Tony can, I hang up the armor. I'm going to run Stark Enterprises. Thor can go rule Asgard because Odin's a little crazy right now. And there you go. You've gotten rid of those three, and you've got this lineup of new heroes with Doctor Strange and Black Panther and Spider-Man. So you've got a lineup to go with. But you keep those guys around. So if you want, when you get to the next Avengers movie, if you want to bring them back and say, you just come back for this movie and you can go away again, the actors would be more amenable to that because it's like, we don't have the whole schedule of doing all of these movies. We can just pop up here and there. And the audience won't have they can still have the characters they like without having to feel like they're cheated by bringing them back from the dead.
Yeah. I mean, but comics are cyclical, right? Like, they always eventually come back around. So eventually some decision's going to have to be made, but who knows, like, timing-wise when that could be.
Well, the other part of it, too, is that the rosters of the Avengers change on the regular in the comics.
All the time.
So, I mean, that you have that as precedent.
But are your core elements ever away for too long? I mean, I feel like they always get, like, hit, like, you know, for a while, but then eventually the kind of... the big bats come back.
The Avengers is like, it's weird because they have the core.
And I don't know Avengers as well. I should preface everything I say. I grew up reading more DC.
Yeah, me too. But, well, when I grew up getting comics, the Avengers are trash. Just straightforward. They were trash. I still have a poster in my childhood bedroom of the Avengers and Cap, Iron Man, and Thor on it. I can tell you Wonder Man and Vision and Scarlet Witch. And then there's these random people that are there. And I'm like, I don't even remember your names. There have been like decades where not all three of the main three have been there and just been random jobbers on the team. So, but the movies are going to stay away from that. They're going to try to keep it to those three and the biggest names they can get. So,
all right, so let's move on. So Ben Affleck likes to talk, and his brother likes to talk about the Batman. And, you know, first let's start with the good news. It's talking about a more traditional Batman in Justice League. How does this make you feel, Chad?
Just one week, I would like to not have to talk about DC. Just one week. Well, let me rephrase that. 1 week where I can talk about DC and it just be all good news. Like, even when Wonder Woman was around, we were still getting bad news. So that's just what this is. Affleck says we're going to get a more traditional Batman, meaning we get rid of Murder Bat from Batman vs. Superman. That should make everybody feel good because most people like that Batman except the fact that he was mowing down people with the Batmobile.
Yeah.
So that should make everybody feel good. But then his brother goes and he's having a good time at the baseball game and gets interviewed, and the interviewer just asks him, what does he think about Ben as Batman and is he going to do the Batman movie? And he makes a joke about Ben being Batman and how he didn't think he was great, and then he said he was great. But then he's like, but I'm sorry to tell you that, you know, he's not going to do that movie. And when the interviewer is like, wait, is that breaking news?
No,
the wheels in Casey's head just started going off.
You
he's
see
like,
it on his face?
Oh, yeah, it was like, I mean, he's an actor, so he kind of played it off, but there's this split second that's like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And he's like, no, I'm, yeah, he was like, is it breaking news? I was just making that up right then. I'm like, we're like, okay. So, I mean, since then, Casey's put out a statement, Ben's put out a statement, WB's put out a statement saying that, you know, he's going to be Batman until we don't want him to be Batman, whatever. I don't know.
WB is probably so pissed when they heard that. What the hell is going on? Somebody get Casey on the phone.
Because it's my opinion that Ben is done. There's a chance if Justice League turns out to be great, Ben might stick around. Oof. But I think once Justice League is done and we get through that cloud of Justice League and he does all the promotion, like in January next year, he'll be like, I'm bowing out. And Matt Reeves will pick somebody else to be Batman. But he can't say that now because you have Justice League coming up. So when the spin is, you know, Casey doesn't know the ins and outs of what's going on with Ben, his career and stuff. But I have two brothers. One of them is overseas. If he was quitting his job, I would know about it. And I don't talk to him. I don't have a way to talk to him every day. I know Ben and Casey can talk whenever they want. So if Ben is not doing the movie, Casey knows. And Casey knows he messed up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, like we're talking to Jim there. I mean,
well, if Justice League sucks, like, it might be time to just try to rinse and repeat Batman again.
But the problem is, he was the best, one of the two best parts of Dawn of Justice.
No, I agree. Look, I, as a huge fan of Frank Miller Batman, Ben Affleck Batman visually, I think has been really good.
Oh, yeah.
Zack Snyder fight scenes are always good, but the choice for him to kill did make him significantly less interesting, because how do you ever justify him not killing someone now? And also, a lot of Batman's like weird insanity comes from his moral code that is actually like not very, you know, it's counterintuitive, right? Because he ends up killing way more people by letting everybody live than if you just kill them. But that, like, but Batman's an absolute insane person, or he's supposed to be, right? I mean, he's obsessive to the point where I think he needs that kind of insane code to make him a little more interesting. So they say they're going to dial it back. I didn't know that, but how do you dial it back now that kind of... I feel like you've crossed the Rubicon.
Because he's morally bound by Superman's death. Superman's death is allegedly the catalyst for all of this. Like,
I mean,
I have seen the great Jesus come and sacrifice himself.
Yep, Superman died for his sins, and now he's gonna. Now Batman
can
go out.
He was like laying a crucifix on the skulls.
Yeah.
Oh man.
These imagery.
Heavy-handed at times.
Imagery.
I still enjoy you, Zack Snyder.
Just wait till he rises from the grave.
I mean, man, the more distance we get from Batman and Superman, I still can't believe they killed Superman and made Doomsday into a 10-minute plot device. It's like it gets harder and harder to believe the longer I live past that movie being made.
A poorly CGI rendered Doomsday.
I mean, it could have come out of any movie. He was probably as visually impressive, if not less than the Abomination from like the Edward Hulk, the Edward Norton Hulk.
He's a step up from Abomination, but he's really close.
Right. I'm being a little salty. You're right.
I mean, but you're not that far off. You're really not. And trust me, I know. I hate watching that movie all the time.
I mean, it's just weird to think that we were all in this emotional place in July of 2015 where it was like Dawn of Justice, Batman versus Superman, and coming, and like we all freaking out going, this is actually going to be a thing, and it's going to come out right about the same time as Civil War, and we're all going to lose our minds, and it's going to be awesome. And then we remembered Zack Snyder was directing the movie.
Because I like Man of Steel, I was giving it a chance, and then
I liked Man of Steel too, actually.
So I was like, okay.
And you know what? There's a sick part of me that does not hate BVS. BVS. I would never defend it in a critical sense, but there are parts of that to enjoy.
Yeah,
like when Batman kicks everyone's ass in that one room.
Yeah, that's great. the end, not so much. And then there's just parts in sprinkled in there. Yeah.
So let's move on really quickly. So, Ron Howard, now directing Young Han Solo, showing photos, Death Star helmets. Your thoughts, sir, on the possibility of the Death Star playing a factor in a movie with a guy who allegedly had never seen the Death Star before when he was flying up in A New Hope?
Like, there's no way that Han Solo can see.
Han can't get eyes on Death Star.
He can't see this. He cannot see this in
the
this
look,
movie.
The look on T-Bob's face, this perplexed look of like, what are you talking about? This cannot be a thing, is exactly what I'm talking about.
I guess the idea has to be that they're building it, right? And it's going to tie in like somehow to everything else.
I would guess, but I don't want him anywhere near
that
thing.
Exactly, right? He doesn't need to be in some intergalactic plot. He needs to be in the Outer Rim.
Yeah, doing
racing swoop bikes. Let's see how Dengar got his face all scarred up. Like, I'm okay to figure out stuff like that, but this speaks to what y'all talked about in the interview, which is just that Disney seems a little afraid to venture out in the Star Wars universe right now.
Which is weird, because you have a whole expanded universe canon that is beloved by generations of people.
Yeah.
It's still that the curse of the prequels. They still can't let that go. And I get it. I mean, for Han Solo, like, you have this character, you fans love him, you don't want to mess it up. But, I mean, at this point, after Obi-Wan, you have to move away from this stuff. Build something new.
I did not even know. That's why I love coming on here. I always learn all kinds of new things. I did not know they were making an Obi-Wan movie.
That came out this week.
I am not that excited about it.
We have a director attached. You know, it's a guy who's got a filmography that includes Billy Elliot, The Hours, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which is one of the most bashed Oscar-nominated movies of all time.
It has a song that I listen to a lot, really good song.
And then
Swings the Central Park.
Yeah, and then Wicked, the Wicked adaptation. So, that's his filmography. So there's still not confirming that McGregor's coming back. But the man's been campaigning for it since Disney bought Lucasfilm.
Ewan has.
Yeah.
No, he wants to.
Like,
I mean, he's the best part of the prequels.
Exactly.
So I'm down.
So, and the assumption would be that it would be set in the time period between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. It would cover his time on Tatooine and whether or not he stayed on Tatooine the entire time.
Well, I think you can get that out your mind. I think he did not stay on Tatooine the whole time. My question with this movie is, with Star Wars Rebels kind of handling Obi-Wan and Darth Maul, which is what everybody thought if we got this movie, that's what it would be. Where does this movie go now? And to me, I think it's going to be, this is going to be after Episode 8. So I think this is going to be what explains Rey's lineage. If you fill in the blanks, that means Obi-Wan's going to go somewhere, he's going to get busy, and he's going to have some kids, and those kids are going to produce Rey.
So that's the newest theory, is that Rey is actually...
It's been going around, like, after the Force Awakens came out, and there's that scene where Rey touches the lightsaber, and she hears all these voices. One of them is Obi-Wan, so that's really where that thing was birthed.
But also hear Yoda in that.
Yeah, you hear Yoda. These are your first steps. I mean, right. That's what it echoes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not.
I feel like Rey, I don't know. I guess it might be boring, but I don't really see how Rey is anything other than a Skywalker. If it's this core Skywalker trilogy.
I can tell you, sir, she is a random child who was sent to Luke Skywalker's Jedi Academy. And when Kylo Ren went in there and started tearing kids up and killing younglings just like his granddaddy, she somehow survived. And Luke found her and put her on Jakku to keep her safe away from mm-hmm. everybody and away mm-hmm. from the world. And her parents don't really
matter.
She's
like Harry Potter.
Yeah. She's essentially a, you know, her parents sent her away to summer camp, and she just never came home for 30 years.
So the only place where I would maybe bounce off of that is the whole line in Force Awakens where, oh, my parents are a secret. That would seem like a little lack of a payoff for how they kind of built up the identity of her heritage.
I mean, there's that, and then when Maz Kanata meets her, and then she pulls Han to the side, it's like, who's the girl? And in the novelization, which, you know, it is official canon.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
They go deeper into this stuff, and I haven't read it, but from what I've heard, they allude more to people knowing that she has a secret and they know what it is. And that would allude to the fact that it's somebody that we do know. Mm-hmm. So, but between the three of us, we have all of the prevailing theories about who Rey is. We've got the Skywalker theory, the Kenobi theory, and the just random chick theory. So one of us is going to be right.
Well, maybe she's just another Immaculate Conception. Little horny midichlorians.
Today was the first day I heard that one, so you're the second person to say that, and it all happened today.
Well, I mean, we had that whole Immaculate Conception conversation on last week's podcast.
I don't think we're going to do that again. But, you know, if they're rehashing everything else, maybe.
I mean, we'll see. Look, personally, I'm excited. It gives me an opportunity to see Bail Organa again. It gives me an opportunity to see Yoda again, even if it's, you know, Force Ghost Yoda or Hologram Hoda, Yoda.
They just need to do like a straight up Wet Hot American Summer thing where they just have Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor in the prequel universe. Make them look younger, I guess, but just like what, just don't really care. Just put them in their old costumes and have a prequel adventure.
Well, me and Chad are both of the opinion that we're getting that in Last Jedi. That there will be a Force Ghost Jedi Council, and on that Force Ghost Jedi Council, you will have Force Ghost Yoda, Force Ghost Obi-Wan Kenobi, played by Ewan McGregor, and then Force Ghost Hayden Christensen.
I want Hayden Christensen brought back in the fold.
He was at Star Wars Celebration. He was really? He was on the panel talking about Revenge of the Sith and all that. So
I mean, Revenge of the Sith is a good movie. I mean,
it's the best of the three.
It's solid. It's yes.
But I mean, I'm interested because it gives me a chance.
It's fun lightsaber fight.
Yeah, it gives me a chance to revisit things. But again, we're revisiting things. We're not. Fleshing out that expanded universe.
That's been kind of the big red flag to me with Disney getting involved in Rogue One, and then getting so involved in.
But the ironic part about that is the very best scenes, the ones that everybody loves, the Vader scenes, they were reshoots added at the end. So I mean, I don't know.
See, to me, I guess I always just assumed the stuff that Disney added to the Rogue One stuff was like the emotional. Rebellions are built on hope, and her giving the speech, and none of that really resonated with me. I didn't really buy everybody being so willing to follow her to the beach.
I bought that little subset of people willing to follow her to the beach. Not the entire Rebel Alliance. It was like, you're crazy. We start a war. We will get obliterated. Go away. this is not a thing. And then Mon Mothra being like, okay, well, if she's going to do it herself, then we're going to have to fix that. So, lastly, let's talk about Patty Jenkins nearing a historic deal to direct Wonder Woman. Your thoughts.
About time. I mean, this is like the biggest no-brainer of all. She's made the best DC movie to date. She's the only thing keeping the DCU afloat right now. Give her whatever she wants, and it seems like that's what they're going to do.
T-Bob, you excited for Patty Jenkins directed Wonder Woman 2?
Yes. I thought Wonder Woman 1 was really good. I think this is cool, too, kind of from a just for female directors. Like, if you think of it, I guess the analogy that pops in my brain doing sports radio is the kind of salary cap analogy. Like, you know, where if you're in a position group, you set the bar for everyone else. That's why there's kind of like a logjam at quarterback because Tom Brady's giving that thing, like, an artificial ceiling. So when people set these high bars, then the next person, they get more and they get more. So, like, one person shooting all the way up like this kind of raises everybody else up with it. So I think that's, for the industry as a whole and for female directors monetarily, it's going to be a really good idea or a really good development.
And beneficial to Sofia Coppola and others like her who can get paid more, which would be a good thing because we need more female voices in, in cinema.
Well, only if paired with the male.
Of course, right. Of course. Apparently, in the Disney Marvel world.
Nope, I'm not doing this.
Nope. Not doing it.
Nope,
not doing it.
That's so y'all limb to die on.
So that'll about do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mesh Theory, and thank you, T-Bob.
Yeah, right on, man. This is a lot of fun. I'm at T-Bob 53. I always enjoy sitting on the Movies on the Brain podcast. Thanks for having me, y'all.
All right. That'll about do it. And let's thank once again Jim Vegeta for coming on the podcast and doing that for us. You can follow him at Jim Vegeta. All right. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you again next week.